Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. I'm joined on the podcast today by Sarah LaRiviere, author of the new novel, Riot Act. Sarah, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, it's so great to be here.
Absolutely. Well, if someone hasn't yet heard about your novel, Riot Act, how would you describe the novel?
Yeah, Riot Act is a book that's motivated by the question, when is freedom of expression worth dying for? And it's narrated by a teenager who's been killed by the police state. And that police state is actually an authoritarian American regime in 1991. So the book is an alternate history set in 1991. And there's an American dictator. So this kid who is narrating the story is a theater kid, and all his friends are theater kids. And he's telling the story of his living friends who have to make the choice if they are going to put on any more plays and risk dying to make their voices heard, or remain silent and do as they are told.
Well, do you remember the original idea or impetus that led you to writing Riot Act?
Yeah, it actually was a sort of a cascade of moments that led to the writing of the book. It was 2015 when the seed of the idea kind of showed up. And I was thinking that I wanted to write something, a series for teenagers. And this Riot Act is the first book in a duology. So at the time I was thinking I wanted to write a series for teenagers. And in order to do that, I wanted to come up with a topic that had very high stakes. And you know, my background is as a social worker. For about 15 years, I worked as a social worker with children and families before I started publishing novels. And so I was thinking about writing a book for older teens with high stakes. And I was thinking developmentally, what would be, you know, something that would really tap into some core fears and animus of older teens. And I thought, well, what teens hate is authority. And so what if I give them authoritarians to combat in this series? That would sustain several books. Part and partner with that, I used to live in Budapest, Hungary in the mid-90s. And I've always been interested in autocratic regimes. Besides being myself a teenager who always rebelled against authority and was quite interested in how artists worked under those circumstances, those things sort of came together for me. And I thought, okay, these are going to be teenagers who are fighting authoritarianism. But I didn't want to set it in the present because, frankly, it's kind of a crazy a random reason that I'm sure you hear from authors all the time. Something random dictates a whole premise in the book. But I didn't want to write texts. I didn't want to write emails. I didn't want to write anything about kids using the internet. I was sort of fatigued of that. So I thought, let me just set this in the past when I was a teenager. And moreover, let me set it in the town where I spent the first 17 years of my life, where my parents also grew up, where my grandparents grew up on farms just outside of town. So it could be really rich kind of emotional territory for me as the writer of sort of this epic tale of kids fighting an American dictator.
When you were writing and when you were thinking about what you just said and the inspiration for setting it in 1991, did you go back to looking at any magazines or your old diaries or you know, some people have this kind of photographic memory of their like high school years, which I wish I did. So I'm just curious, what did you do to kind of put your mind back into 1991 as you were thinking about and writing the book?
That's a great question. And of course, that was like the most fun of anything, was really trying to dig back in to the late 80s and early 90s and kind of mine what was going to prompt those emotions for me. So I listened to a lot of music. early punk rock music. I watched a lot of old movies, kind of classic cult movies from the 80s. But for the purposes of the themes of this book, I also looked, because this book is written in 90, or is set in 91, when it's kind of the dawn of, you know, the World Wide Web is about to be, Netscape is about to be released, and that kind of happens, it's developed in Champaign-Urbana, which is where the book is set. I thought it would be cool to look at old issues of, do you remember that magazine? It's like an obscure kind of hacker magazine, sort of called Mondo. Was it called Mondo 2000? I think so.
Yeah.
That was a great resource for me, because it is so like packed with the excitement of what the internet was going to become. And it sort of really hooked me in, even more than like the music I loved or the movies I watched. It hooked me into kind of the particular anticipation of how the internet was going to change the world, how programmers thought it would change the world. That was really exciting to me. The other thing that I did that was the most helpful was I have this running list of slang from the late 80s and up to 1991. And I've been just like totally brutal about not allowing into the book any slang that wasn't used before 91, which has required so much like tracking down of these just obscure little phrases and just trying to make sure that the first time we heard them was the late 80s and that people were still using them in 91. So I sort of created a cocoon for myself of nostalgia, but not just nostalgia, also trying to tap into the particular hopes and fears that were happening kind of culturally at that moment. And then overlaying upon that, what if art was shut down, music was shut down, theater was shut down? Like what would people feel as if they had lost at that critical moment in time?
Can you tell us about your writing journey that led you to writing your debut novel? I'm just curious, when you were working, as you mentioned, as a social worker with families, were you writing fiction at the time? Were you writing short stories in your spare time or dabbling with a novel? Can you tell us about your writing journey?
Sure. Yeah. You know, I wasn't at all. I had no intention of writing fiction. I had always written a lot of poetry. From the time I was a teenager, just for myself personally, not to publish or anything. But I actually was feeling really burned out as a social worker, just kind of exhausted. And I love visual art. I love to paint and draw. And I thought, you know, what would be fun? I just needed to do something to relax a little bit. And I thought what would be fun is to create a body of visual work that hangs together somehow. Maybe I can do a children's picture book. Since I was working with kids, it kind of made sense. Like maybe this is a way I can communicate with kids and say something empowering and funny and entertaining and focus on the visual arts. So I thought, well, but I don't know how to write a story. So I went to, this must have been 2004, maybe 20 years ago, I took a continuing ed course at NYU in like intro to children's book writing. And because that was the part I didn't know how to do. And so the instructor gave us the first lesson in the class. It was like some prompt, like, you know, in writing class, there's always like a prompt, like take an early childhood memory and describe it in three paragraphs, right, or something.
Lowe's knows that more projects mean more tools. For a limited time, new and existing MyLowe's Rewards credit card members can get 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more, in-store and online. Don't wait to get the things you need. Get special financing today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Now through August 27th, choose 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more. Offer subject to credit approval and cannot be combined. Minimum monthly payments required. See store or Lowe's.com for details.
And use as much sensual sensory detail as possible. I was like, okay, this is fun. And so I, you know, mind it up and started writing. And I just didn't stop. I wrote an entire novel from that prompt. I just didn't feel like stopping writing. And the instructor of the class was like, this is really good. It's like, is it? Is this even a book? What did I write? You know? So that at that moment, I caught the bug of like, okay, it's sort of like I had turned a faucet on inside myself. And I was like, wow, I can do this, but how do I do it well? Like, I didn't just want to write a book. I wanted to write like a very clear, very powerful, expressive book. And so 20 years later, you know, I'm still trying to figure out how to do that. Riot Act is my third published novel. The sequel to Riot Act will come out a year later. And then, you know, it's just all part of this wonderful journey that I'm on to try to figure out how to express emotion clearly and with precision.
In your experience as a social worker with children and families, how can books like Riot Act help kids who are worried about the American political context today?
Thank you for asking that question. What I think is really cool about books is that there's something a kid can experience in private, and they do not lecture you if they're good books. So a kid who is worried, who came across Riot Act, could read it and feel less alone with their worry. And feeling less alone is a really key part of staying afloat and mentally just balanced during periods of crisis. If a kid is feeling like the world is in crisis, or their community is in crisis, or their local librarian is being attacked and they're afraid of what that means, they can find in a book like Riot Act company. They don't have to be alone with these worries. And extending out from that is the fact that an adult wrote this book. An adult is also concerned about these things, and that kids have every right to be concerned with worst case scenarios, not to be consumed by them and not to be disarmed or disempowered by fear, but rather to be recognized. Yes, what you're worrying about is legitimate, and you're not alone, and there are ways of coping. There are ways of drawing upon your power and inherent strength to navigate what's happening now and what may be ahead.
What writing advice would you offer for those who are working on their own stories or novels?
Oh my gosh. Well, I think first and foremost, you know, the thing that cripples most writers is, you know, they'll have a burst of excitement and start writing something, and then they'll read it and they'll be like, oh my God, this isn't good enough. A lot of people who want to be writers, their taste far outpaces their skill level, not their future ability to write the book, or not the book that's within them, but their current skill level. So my biggest piece of advice is persevere. Don't judge your own writing too harshly. Let yourself write. Let yourself get the story out. And then, you know, there is a point where you start sharing with people, your work with people, and you start getting feedback, and it hurts. That's the second thing that can really knock writers off the horse, is getting honest feedback that, you know, maybe resonates. That can be enough to make you quit, which is fine if you don't have to write your book. But if you do, you've got to find a way to hear the feedback without being like emotionally dismantled by the feedback. So keep going and persevere is my biggest advice. And then you'll find your path. You'll find who are the good readers for you. What are the good classes if you're a classes person, or instruction books if that's your speed, or what podcasts like this one keep you kind of inspired and moving forward. Everyone's path is totally different, but the thing people have in common who get books written and published is they do not give up and they do not let other people tell them that their work isn't good enough. They don't take that in and take that personally. They can just take it and work with it and keep going. Does that make sense?
It does. Have you started thinking beyond the duology and what you might write next, or are you kind of focused on the second book now?
Although I'm immersed in the second book, I do have a few other projects on the back burners. I have a novel for adults that I'm developing. I have a couple of television projects that I'm developing. And I also have another YA novel that's a sort of a detective mystery that I'm kind of in the early stages of collecting ideas. And for me, the early stages is I've been collecting ideas for the next YA detective book for about 3 years. That's an early stage for me. But I haven't written anything down yet. So yes, there's always some pots kind of cooking on the fire.
What novels have you read recently that you enjoyed?
You know, there's a few things that I've been reading lately that I really love. I'll tell you, like, the secret about me is that mostly what I read are how-to books. I'm obsessed with doing things with my hands, and I'm obsessed with learning how to build things and cook things and sew things and carve things out of wood. And so my happy place is reading how-to books, and I have a wall full of them, and I can tell a good one from a bad one at the used bookstore and within seconds. So that's my real pleasure reading. But the best novel I've read in the past year is an older novel. I'm actually not sure when it was published, but it's by Walter Dean Myers, and the book is Dope Sick. And it's almost a fever dream of a book about a kid who is dope sick. 2009, that's when he published it. Surreal, otherworldly, and just so concise and emotional. It just blew my head off. I'm trying to look at how many pages. It's like less than 200 pages and 186 pages. And wow, I mean, talk about a poet. He's really a master. The other thing that I read a lot of is nonfiction, and that's for Riot Act research. And this research has, you know, been ongoing for many years, but there's so many gems in there. And right now I'm in the middle of a memoir by Viv Albertine of The Slits, and the book is called Close, 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 Music, 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 Boys, Boys, Boys. And it's her story of becoming the musician that she became. It's a great one.
Where can people find you online if they want to learn more about you and your novels?
Yes. So my website is sarahlariviere.com. That's a great place to get a kind of an overview of my books and links to order them. You can find everything sort of contemporary that I'm doing, appearances, readings, other things on Instagram. Instagram is where I'm the most active. And that's also Sarah LaRiviere. And it's pretty obvious which Sarah LaRiviere is me.
Great. That's wonderful. Well, again, we've been speaking to Sarah LaRiviere, author of the new novel Riot Act. The novel is available now, so go buy a copy. And Sarah, thanks so much for doing this interview.
Thank you so much, Jeff. It's been a lot of fun.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.